Welcome to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. You just never know what direction this program is going to go into. So I decided I was going to just put on my introduction, and then I was going to sit down and coordinate my thinking about where this program was going. I actually had an idea. I still have an idea, but now I'm digressing. Or not. And as I went on to my Audacity site and started to record the intro, the whole thing just froze. It just stopped. My little mixer just wasn't turning on and nothing was happening. So I unplugged everything and I plugged everything back and still it wasn't working right. It was reverberating when I would put it on record. And then I went into the audio setup and noticed that all the settings had just simply disappeared, the ones that I've had every single week. And things had been working really well for the last, about 6 months since I was able to figure out how to, get the thing to work. And so I fiddled and fiddled and fiddled and fiddled, and finally I was able to get it back to some sort of similarity to what it's been before. I notice always that the gain is never really good when I hear playbacks of it. I have actually occasionally listened to it online using the platforms, and it just never has the right gain. I've been fiddling here. I still don't know what the problem is, but I'm doing the best I can, which brought me to a thought, a line from a Robert Burns poem that says, "The best laid schemes of mice and men gang after glee," which means they often go wrong. And then I thought, well, let me look up the poem because I don't even remember the name of it. And the name of the poem is "To a Mouse," but the full name of it is "To a Mouse on Turning Up in Her Nest with the Plow," November 1785. Well, the poem is about this happy little mouse living in a field, and then along comes the farmer and plows the whole thing up. Well, that's perfect. But he says, "But mousie, thou art no thy lane. Improving foresight may be vain. The best laid schemes of mice and men gang after glee, and leave us naught but grief and pain for promised joy." Well, boy, ain't that the truth. I felt like the mouse whose field had been plowed up when I go to my little computer and figure it's going to work like it's worked every week, and it doesn't work at all. And two things happen internally: anxiety and anger. Those two things. And you say, well, what's the big deal? Your computer's not working. It just seems that life is such that in small and big things, these are the realities that we must expect. So the anxiety and the anger is really, well, useless, number one, but also it interferes with doing what must be done in this world, and it also interferes with your peace at any given moment. And I'm not talking about your peace entirely. I'm talking about my peace. Maybe your peace too. I don't know. That's something to consider in listening to this program, I guess. When things go wrong, I feel helpless. I feel stupid. I feel that something really bad's going to happen going forward. I mean, so what? So I don't get the program on the air. So I have to buy another mixer. So what's the worst that could happen? And even if the worst happens, well, I'm supposed to have an understanding about that, not only practically, because I live in the real world, but also spiritually. And yes, I somehow have tied it into the theme of today's program. Yay! Which is, one of these days, I'm going to get it, and I'm going to pray until I do. Suffering, great or small, is a reality of our lives. It always has been since the fall. And I've mentioned this before, books and books and books and lectures and sermons mention this constantly, that Christ came to join in our suffering and to transform it. Not that we don't have it, but that at the end of it, there is a door through which we go to eternal life. And so the suffering now has changed into something useful and meaningful. Oh, my anxieties and angers at every little thing and at every big thing is counterproductive, and it actually makes it worse, both practically and spiritually. I walk around anxious and angry about any form of suffering as if there has been no transformation, as if I don't believe a word of the faith that I practice. I have a slightly bigger example that as yet is still somewhat unresolved and is personal, but it's not something that hasn't happened to every woman or many women out there. But for each of us, the experience is unique, obviously. Here's my particular experience. My mother died at the age of 48 when I was 20 of breast cancer. She hadn't seen a doctor for, let's say, 20 years, because that's how old I was, before she was diagnosed with the cancer. And obviously, she ignored symptoms. Why didn't she go to the doctor when she had symptoms? Well, ask yourself the same question when you don't go to the doctor. It was years before I was willing to go to have a mammogram myself, and I was younger at the time, obviously, because fear and anxiety about what might happen to me prevented me from doing that which might help me last longer. And I think, well, I know, fear of suffering. My mother's situation was better than most, albeit at a time when chemotherapy was really truly a new field. She didn't have huge amounts of overt pain. She had some. The treatments themselves were painful, actually, because they used to inject the chemical into the hand, and that hurt her considerably. And then there was, of course, her weakness. There was her color. There was the cramps in her legs from the lack of potassium, for which they gave her potassium pills. And I suspect that there's a lot of pain she had that she simply didn't tell us about. That was her way. She was a stoic, oddly stoic person. I'm not sure it was from a religious point of view, but she was indeed very stoic. I don't recall being particularly upset during the 14 months she lived, in the sense it became part of everyday life. But I'm sure it affected me. And so it affected me in terms of my own body and my own fears about going to the doctor and about having things done. In addition to my tendency toward normal anxiety, well, anxiety, I don't know if it's normal or not, anxiety and fear about everything in life. Going back to the specifics here, though, I have been going for mammograms. I hadn't had one in 2021, I think, during COVID, but I have had a biopsy for a cyst that I had at some point. And so it's a real issue for me, as it is for many women, but in my case, in light of my mother's death because of breast cancer. In the past few years, it was always, though fearful, it was a little less so, because what they would do is they would do the mammogram, but they would have me wait, and not just me, other people as well. And if they felt there was a need, they would then send you or me to have an ultrasound. And that was scary, because you'd have to wait for about 25, 30 minutes before they would say, okay, now we have to do an ultrasound. Now, I will tell you, this is part of my annoyance at the medical system, in that in my case, the mammogram, because of my physical density in the area, is never sufficient. So I always have had to go and do the ultrasound. I always thought that was a very humane way to do it, because otherwise you have to wait a fairly long time to find out, like a week or two, to find out what the result is and then be told to go back. And then, you know, things either happen well or they don't. But same medical people, same medical system, but a different building within the system in the same area. This one doesn't do it that way. First time in years. And so I simply had the mammogram, and that was Wednesday. It is now Saturday, and I have no idea whether or not there's a problem. Other women can identify with this. It happens to them. That's often the way it's done. Of course, my anger and anxiety was raised because why are they doing it differently now from the way they've done it before? And they have my history in front of them. So it is possible, very likely, that there might be something there. So, not unlike with the computer this morning, the intensity of just, oh, I can't solve this, I need to solve this, obviously an issue about control. I became apoplectic in this apartment once again, albeit I didn't throw anything around, but just so worried. And immediately, guess where my head went? To the changing of my life on a dime, that everything I do daily is no longer going to be what I do daily. It's going to be a life of suffering and cures and sickness and all the things that you see happening to other people, but you try to tell yourself will never happen to you, even though obviously, as a Christian, generally, and as a human being, generally, I certainly know that that's not the case. I had spiritual direction Friday, and that always helps to refocus me. I always think before I go for spiritual direction that I'm not going today. It doesn't make any difference. Life is terrible, and I'm just gonna die, and all the things that everybody says. And I am saying it as someone who presumably has some kind of not understanding exactly, but is trying to absorb the teachings of my faith about suffering, about its meaning, about what I'm here for, about what's going to happen down the road. Why do I always fight the problem? And worse, why do I always fight the solution? The focus of my particular direction is based in Ignatian spirituality. I've mentioned this before in other programs. Basically, you start with this principle and foundation, which is why are we here? We're here to praise, reverence, and serve God in this life so that we can be with Him eternally in the next. Anything in His created universe, anything that helps us in that road, get to that point, do the praise, the reverence, and service that we can use of the created things, anything that doesn't get us there, we should discard. We should also not be attached to a long life, to a short life, to honors, to praise, to all of the things, the contrasts in life. We should be detached from them. We should learn to be detached from them because our goal is very specific. I have to admit that whenever I think about what is really a very simple premise, not easily to achieve, but a simple premise, I become a little bit calmer. God made me, created me, also you, so don't think I'm just talking about myself here. He has a plan for me as He has a plan for everyone. And if I apply principle and foundation to all of that, then at some point, in prayer, in constant prayer. That's why now I've come to understand that prayer is key. And that's true as much as it is so difficult for me to focus on prayer, as I'm sure that's true of a lot of other people. So, my spiritual director and I talked about the ways using principle and foundation, using the meditations, using the Bible, using all the tools that I have, that all Catholics have at their disposal to guard my peace. Some of the tools I have, believe it or not, are on the app Hallow. One of them is the series, the daily contemplations, which are conducted by Father Tim Gallagher, who is an expert in the area of Ignatian spirituality. And with his incredibly calm and soothing voice, I listen to those daily, in addition to some of the other things I do. And that reminds me of God's intentions toward me, towards all of us, and what suffering, what getting through all of the daily struggles ultimately is about. getting back to him. You know, what just came to mind as I was speaking was it's kind of like your typical airplane flight these days, getting to the airport, going through the piles of people, all the noise, all the counter shouting, all of the announcements, all of the crowds, all of the crush. It is an unpleasant experience to actually fly. It's wonderful to be places, but to get there, miserable. Unless you have a private plane. I'm always amazed at the small things of order in the world in terms of what you're dealing with and how something pops up to assist you if you're looking in dealing with it. So for me, it was this. As you know also, if you have listened to this program, I am a big fan of Flannery O'Connor, and I've read a lot of her stuff. I've read about her. I've read her letters. I've read several biographies about her, and I found another one online as I was scrolling around. I think I was looking up a comment that she made, and then I found this particular biography called The Abbess of Andalusia, The Spiritual Biography of Flannery O'Connor, written by Lorraine Murray. When I saw it, I had to get it right away, and I got it on Kindle so I could start reading it. And I only read a very small part of it, really the prefaces and a few of the initial information about her life. But I was already starting to highlight, even when I was reading the preface by Joseph Pierce, who is a teacher at Ave Maria University, the reiterations of things that, as a Catholic, I know. For example, he says in the very beginning of the preface, "It is the suffering of God himself that makes sense of all suffering, and it is through Christ's suffering that Christians find meaning and purpose in their own." He goes on, as Flannery herself would in her stories, to say, and this is the trick of, I guess, detachment. He says, quote, "One has to accept sorrow, for it is to be of any healing power, and that is the most difficult thing in the world. A priest once said to me, when you understand what accepted sorrow means, you will understand everything. It is the secret of life." And here's something he says that I really don't think I quite got until I read it. Or I did, but I sort of poo-pooed it. I didn't want to face it. He says that not accepting suffering is really not accepting that Christ died and resurrected and redeemed us, basically. And if you know anything about Flannery O'Connor, she became a famous writer, but she also died at the age of 39 after several years facing a terrible disease that killed her at a very young age. Just like her father before her, she had a crippling case of lupus. And this was at a time when they didn't have much treatment for lupus. She ended up literally not being able to walk or go anywhere. She had to basically stay at Andalusia with her mother, who took care of her for the most part, and where she wrote. And she wrote these grotesque stories about people, mostly in the area of the South, mostly Protestant, because that's the faith that was pretty much extant there. Being a Catholic was pretty unusual in Georgia, where she lived. And so she wrote these stories, these horrible stories about horrible people. And I have to tell you, I used to not like the stories, but you have to understand what she's doing. She's trying to show that grace exists even in the midst of the terrible ugliness of the world caused by sin. Christ, in his birth, death, and resurrection, offers us, again, the beauty we threw away and continue to throw away. He asks us to look at him and to love him and to thereby end up in heaven. And that includes acceptance of suffering, which he transformed with a promise, an absolute vow that we will go to heaven if we accept. So as Pierce says, she lived her life in suffering, as if she believed with Christ that suffering was transformed. The only way to experience the transformation is to accept that it is, in fact, through suffering now that the transformation occurs. So, in addition to my spiritual direction, getting back to principle and foundation in the Ignatian way, and reading what happened with Flannery O'Connor and how she responded to it. She's not the only one. It just happens that I found her again during my own paroxysms of fear and anxiety and anger, because I don't know what the outcome's going to be. I will probably hear next week, and I'm guessing they're going to tell me I need an ultrasound. I have to guard with prayer, with grace, against my immediate reaction, which is, oh, everything's changing. I can't stand it. I can't exist like this. I can't stand the suffering. I don't want to suffer. It can't happen. As if, somehow or another, I'm going to be spared what the rest of humanity has not been spared. And all of this in contradistinction to what I propose I believe as a faithful Catholic. If I didn't believe in God, life would be a battle still. But when I believe in God, and when I accept, which hasn't happened yet, but when I accept, then I will have a battle still, but the outcome of the battle for me and for you is assured. What it means to follow Christ is going through the suffering and allowing it to be transformed, recognizing that it is transformed when I go through that door, just like it was transformed when he went ahead of us and suffered and died and rose. I'm not going to pretend that this is not a tall order. I can tell you what's going to happen next week with me. Accepting and acting on the grace that is offered to us is a battle itself. My spiritual director talked about giving over to God the thing that's happening, this fear, this anxiety about something specific in this case, but it's out there all the time with me. And I realize that that's part of my problem, because it goes back again to trust and to love. In order to give it over to him and to recognize that he may allow the things I fear to happen to me, I then resist the trust. But it makes no sense, because I'm going to go through it anyway. And what a better way to go through it with him, throwing it all to him, recognizing that he knows better than I do. How can I dare to assert my will as a creature against the God of the universe? Now, I've said that I've never been really attached to the Blessed Mother because of who knows why. Who knows why? What events in my life or what focuses I had that I just didn't pay a whole lot of attention to her. And of course, our Protestant brothers and sisters think we pay entirely as Catholics too much attention to her. But the fact is, she stands as an incredible model, a human, fully human model of applying the principle and foundation. She understood that she was there to praise, reverence, and serve God. The graces provided through the Catholic Church, the sacraments, the various types of meditations, like the Ignatian exercises, all of these are there to help us do what she did without anything but any guidance. She said, "Let it be done to me according to your will." Wow, wow. Can you say that? Can I say that? And I'm going to tell you, so far, I'm very half and half about it. I know that's what I must say. I know that's what the strength of the sacraments will hopefully get me to. Abandoning ourselves to God's will isn't just what we must do as good Catholics, but it also is possibly the only way to peace in this life and an assurance of eternal life. Once again, I'm talking to myself more than I'm talking to you in a way. What's the alternative? Rant and rage, as I have done, against the machine, or accept God's providence and his salvation and the gift of eternal life in exchange for this short period of life in which things are not easy? The practice of prayer hopefully will get me and you into that place where we see it clearly, that going through the suffering accepting the suffering, the inevitable suffering, accepting the promise of the death and resurrection of Christ is the only way to go. I really need to pay more attention to Mary. She really did let go and let God. I'm praying that I do the same and that you do the same. Well, I guess that was another rambly, ordinary old Catholic me. After I got the computer working, I just sat down and did it. So, I hope you're enjoying the program. If you are, do tell your friends and relatives about it. And I'll talk to you next week.